Hello and welcome to Extraordinary Ordinary, a series that commemorates and celebrates women, living and historical, in Central Victoria. Thank you for joining me, your host, Lisa D'Onofrio, in raising up women's voices, elevating local women's stories, and creating a new female-centred history. This is episode 7 of an 8-part series, which consists of short interviews with a wide range of diverse women about women from our community who have made an impact on them, and longer interviews with local women, writers, researchers, historians, and curators who discuss historical women. In this episode, we will hear interviews loosely themed around growing. The interviewees in order are Casey Sparks, Maz Bennett, Blossom Simon D'Onofrio, Meg Ullman, and Suzanne Cullen. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au. Hey, Casey, thanks for coming in today. How would you describe yourself?
Wow, this is a great question to come, you know, first time. How would I describe myself? I'd describe myself as somebody who grew up by the ocean, so a coastie in my heart, but then moved to the country. And I have two kids, so I'm a parent. I describe myself as a parent, like a cool parent. And, yeah, a really physical person, someone who needs to be outdoors all the time, doing stuff. Essentially, I am a gardener by trade who lives in Tooting, and I've got my soccer club. Yeah, it's great. So soccer club is a happy place for me.
Is there a woman in Central Vic that has made an impact on you in a particular way?
So Central Victoria and aspiring women, in regards to my work, I have, you know, varied, I guess, diversity around, like, who my clients are and what my gardens are. And what started as a very ordinary job, 2 hours a fortnight in Hepburn Springs with I'll call her old then, because she was old then. Now she's 95. Her name's Jo Notes. She's okay with old. She knows it. And she's someone that has, I guess, inspired me over time, because she is persistent in her gardening. She doesn't garden. She's quite sort of hunched over and you know, has limited capacity to stand up for long periods of time. But she's someone who really enjoys, you know, her roses, her lawn, her veggie beds, and her flowers. So those four simple things. And yeah, I go back every fortnight, me or the crew, and yeah, we keep building, you know, those small pleasures for her, I guess. Yeah. Over time, over the years, what we've built on is something, yeah, that began, yeah, so simplistic and very occasional, but now it's almost family. Like, it's quite extraordinary. Yeah, most recently she got me to get her some dwarf fruit trees, and we planted these dwarf fruit trees in between these planter boxes that we made not that long ago. And, like, you know, Joni, you're 95. You've got to wait for fruit trees. She's happy to wait for fruit trees, you know? Yeah, it's cool. You know, doing these jobs for Joan, planting out tomatoes that, what do they take, 10 to 12 weeks or something to fruit and things like that. Everything we do for her, we're like, how much time have you got left, in a sense? Like, she doesn't seem to consider that. And so we don't really consider that, but it's kind of reality that she is getting towards the end of her life. But it's not something that comes up in conversation, and that's cool. Like, that sort of attitude to life and to living is, yeah, it's really quite calming, I think is a good word. Like, it's not, I think she's more turned into the person that worries about me. She'll call me and she'll be like, I haven't heard from you for days. You know, where are you? You okay? Like, and I'm, yeah, you shouldn't be worrying about me. If I don't hear from you, you know, it's more so. With Joan, I know that she's someone who respects us coming in to her garden and doing the things that she can't do anymore because of her age. But yeah, she is inspiring. Like 95, living independently, enjoying her garden, super social. She plays mahjong. You know, she has friends come over and plays mahjong, and yeah, and she's incredible.
Hi, Maz. Thank you so much for coming in today. My first question for you is, how would you describe yourself?
Oh, I find that very difficult to describe oneself. I'm a person that it's been very involved over my, dare I say it, 70-odd years. I've been a hairdresser, worked with women for many, many years. I did my apprenticeship. I've worked in public relations. I had my own entertainment company. I sold motor cars. I've been there, done that, if I dare say that little title. I think now in my retirement I seem to be more busier than ever. I've tried to step back, but not long ago I set up an organisation here called PAG, which is Positive Ageing Advocacy Group, which has been very, very successful. And I've had to hand all of that over now because of health. And I'm missing every little bit of the work that I've done over all those years.
This podcast is about women from Central Victoria who have made an impact on other women. Who is it that you would like to talk about?
I've chosen Sarah Florentia Bladen-Neal. Now, that is quite a large title, but she's deserved of it because she married into a very wealthy family. She came from quite a humble family in Middlesex in London and married Colonel Neal. And they travelled out to Australia in the 1850s. He unfortunately passed away in, 1859, I think it was. Sarah, on the loss of her husband, needed to get herself involved in the Society of Melbourne. She could see that this is where she fitted in really, really well. She had property left to her by him, which was in Corowa. And there was quite a lot of land up there, and that's where she first ventured and started growing mulberry trees on some of the property because she realised that there was an industry that was needed in Australia. She travelled widely across Australia to get support for that. And as she was settled in Melbourne, she was given a room at Government House because the powers that be really liked what she wanted to do. So she was given a room as an office and also a plot, would you believe, in the gardens of Government House to grow mulberry trees, which was the food for the silkworms, for the silk. From there, she was granted 1,000 acres up on Mount Alexander. Well, Mount Alexander was really unknown, so she employed someone to go to the mountain and check it out and see that it was suitable for planting and setting up what was called a sericulture school. This person apparently was a fraud. He took her money and said, yes, it's an ideal spot, but we know, the end of the story coming in here, that it was not successful. The land is absolutely terrible up there. The discussion was that she's only a woman and, you know, how can a woman set up an industry she doesn't need to know, so I'll just say it's okay. But, you know, she had all this land, so she only worked about 20 acres of it up there and she planted hundreds of thousands of trees. She had workers, she employed people from the area and to put the buildings. There were 4 buildings up on Mount Alexander, even though the remnants of only one are standing now. But there was a magnanary, which was for the rearing of the silkworms. There was a leaf room, which you had to sort out the leaves for feed. There was a cottage, and there was also the school, what they called a school, but it was education of the silkworm industry. And at this time, she set up a company. The company was called the Victorian Ladies Sericulturals Company, and she had hundreds of members there, all society people. You know, it actually draws a picture of all these women in their finery, or being a member of this company and Sarah being the lead woman who was doing all this hard work. But the cottage up there was for managers. She put in managers, a husband and wife team. the Grovers. Their name was Jesse and Harry Grover. Their son, Monty, actually went to school at Harcourt for 5 years. And the list on that company register, they're titled. There's titles next to all the names, unbelievably. And no men.
So she came from humble beginnings, and through her marriage and her hard work and dedication, she became accepted in society so that she was able to, garner these relationships.
Of course.
And do you think that was also because of the type of woman she was?
Yes. She was out there. She really was. She was an entrepreneur of the day. She set up meetings and all with these women. The women all supported her and came along to these meetings. And of course, you know, the Premier of New South Wales, even though it was a Victorian company, she needed that support further into Australia. But the Premier of New South Wales came along to her meeting, and his only comments were about her beautiful silk stockings. So it really shows you that the men really didn't want her to succeed. But she did succeed. She did succeed in Corowa, but unfortunately the site on Mount Alexander was not the right place for her at all. But she moved 13,000 trees from that site up to her holdings in Corowa. Now that's a lot. She travelled with them. And we're talking about by train and paddle steamer. This was an industry that she set up for women, just for women, and even young girls to get them involved. It was to give them a bit of independence. And, you know, this was going to be an industry for Australia, not just for Mount Alexander or Corowa, because times were tough. People had land, but it was costing money to them to do something with their land. It's a little bit different to today, and it's very hard to understand what it must have been like in the 1800s.
And so what year did she set this up?
She set up the meeting that she had here was in 1874. She had a meeting in Castlemaine, which quite a few women apparently attended. So we're talking about the 1860s to the 1880s. She passed away in 1884. So we're looking at a 20-year time span there that she really worked hard to get women involved in an industry.
What impact did researching and knowing Sarah's story have on you?
A big impact. In fact, so much so that I'm still doing researching on the woman. I'd like to know a little bit more about her early days before she even, you know, married the colonel. I just feel as though she's a member of my family. There's more to her story, a lot more to her.
Personally, do you find any connection with Sarah?
Personally, I do on my outlook on life, yes, because I'm all for women being so involved and being independent. And I look around now and I think, oh, I wish a lot of the women were around in my early days. And what can I say? The ideals or the opportunities for women nowadays weren't there when I was first working.
What do you think Sarah's legacy should be?
Sarah left a legacy in New South Wales, in Corowa, because she was so involved in the community up there. Unfortunately, in our area, she wasn't as involved. And I think that her story needs to be told.
Hey Blossom, thanks for coming in. How would you describe yourself?
I've been thinking about this question for a very long time because I am an overthinker. I feel most myself when my hands are dirty. And I feel grounded and present. Also around a fire. I think I also feel really like myself around a fire. And I'm also in love with my guitar. I can't stay still or in one place for very long without feeling really pent up and just like not like I'm living my life to its fullest. So I really like to move around physically and also, yeah, learning new things and changing the way that I do things, I think, is really important for me.
Who's a woman from Central Victoria who has made an impact on you?
A woman who I think is extraordinary is a woman called Mel. I did work experience with her last year on her farm called Gung Ho. And this year I've also been volunteering a little bit, so I've been able to spend a little more time with her on that land and that place.
Are there any particular ways that Mel has had an impact on you and perhaps how you see things or how you do things?
After reflecting on my time at Gung Ho last year, I realised that the biggest takeaway for me was just like the influence from being around people who talk truly about themselves and what they're feeling, how especially Mel talks so truthfully and in a really down-to-earth way, and how she can convey the things that needs to be said without like kind of flying around the question. She's straight to the point. And I think she's a very good communicator in that sense that she's a clear communicator in a way that she says what needs to be said. I also crave to know what people are truly feeling, so that was really important for me to learn. Gung Ho was founded by Sass and Mel 8 years ago. Both Sass and Mel had a passion for growing food, and they both wanted to grow for their community. And this came from a place of love, I think, and also a need to change the way that humans are receiving food. They both recognized that the food system globally and also locally was getting food from really faraway places, and humans had a really disconnected relationship with receiving food. So around here, Castlemaine, they realized that lots of the places that we get food from, so like our local IGA, like all the food has been like imported. They set up Gung Ho. It took them a while to find a place to set up their business. And after a year of searching, they found Katie and Hugh's place, which is beneath Lianganuk, in a really beautiful place energetically, and also it's just stunning to be there. So they planted their first garlics 8 years ago, and then they just started growing more and more and were able to provide for our community. Through Gung Ho, they achieved a local food system almost, where they can provide for the community. Yeah, they also did food boxes, so like a lot of people would get their veggie boxes from the markets, and were able to also eat fresh produce locally.
Did this way of thinking about food have any effect on you personally?
Yeah, I think I gained a deeper connection to what I eat. For me, being able to actually grow food alongside Mel, or like, yeah, she taught me how to plant seedlings and harvest certain things. That gave me a lot of confidence, actually, growing my own food in the garden. That also gave me a wider like outlook when like looking into industrial farming and how that really wrecks the earth. Like, yeah, it's not a really sustainable way of producing food, because after a while the soil depletes and you can't use it anymore. So yeah, being aware that small-scale farms like Gung Ho can really pave the way for the future because of their really down-to-earth approach. Yeah, another amazing thing about Gung Ho was the culture, I think, has been created by Mel and supported by the many people that have been to Gung Ho and had an impact on being involved with Gung Ho over the years. It's a really beautiful environment where you can be yourself and everyone speaks truthfully, because that is what they owe themselves and the people around them. By literally having your hands in the soil, you are down to earth. And maybe through that groundedness and that love of what you're doing, either attracts the best people or creates an environment where you can be your best self.
Welcome, Meg. It's so great to have you on the phone.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
My first question for you is, how would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as a work in progress. I'm 49. I'm going to be 50 next month. And I live in Daylesford on beautiful Jarra country on a quarter acre permaculture plot that I share with my partner, Patrick, and my son, Woody, and my dog, Zero. We've got three beehives and chickens and ducks and lots of food growing. So that's sort of my context where I'm planted at the moment. And because I'm going to be 50 so soon, I've been thinking about my life and where I am now and where I've come from. And I grew up in Melbourne, in the suburbs. And I feel like for the first half of my life was learning and accumulating and doing what I was told. And this second half has been questioning all of that, unlearning a lot of it, and redefining for myself who I am, but most importantly, what I value and what I want to be doing with my life.
Is there a woman with a Central Victorian connection that has made an impact on you?
There are so many women with a Central Victorian connection who have made an impact on me. It's hard to choose just one to speak about, but I will try. And the woman I'm going to speak about is Sue Dennett, who is a very important woman in my life. She is a great mentor and a great teacher and just a wonderful human being. She is probably better known for those people not in our community as being the partner of David Holmgren, the co-originator of permaculture. And they have been, Sue and David have been life partners for 40 odd years. And I really came to know Sue not long after I moved to this area 2 decades ago. When I first moved to this area, I didn't know what permaculture was. I was a bike rider. I still had a car. I still shopped at a supermarket and was still living a pretty mainstream life. Through meeting Sue, that I realize that there are other ways to live, and that there are other ways to live that you can't see, but I'm sort of rubbing my heart at the moment, where we can live more in line with our values. And seeing Sue live her life has been a great inspiration for, she just lives her life. She's in her mid-70s. She has long white hair. She's really physical. She's really in her body. She has goats which she milks every day, and she takes them down into the gully, the Spring Creek gully behind her house. And she's just really physical, and she's really gutsy. She's really radical, and it's very rare these days. Most grandmas her age are really looking to retire and to stop what they're doing and to slow down, and they want all the comforts, and that's not Sue's way at all.
How has Sue made an impact on the way that you live?
Well, I would say that she's probably made the biggest impact of anybody I know on my life. But more recently, I've been thinking about aging and eldership and who I have around me, what women in particular I have around me who I see as role models, who I look up to as elders, not for their wisdom that they can impart on me specifically, but how they are in the world and how they are as older women in the world so I can look up to them in that respect. And Yeah, I'm so grateful that I have Sue in my life because she's gutsy and she's lovely and she's generous and she's kind. But I think it's her gutsiness that I really admire because I want to be a gutsy old lady too. And I'm just grateful to have Sue in my life to show me another way to be an older lady.
We've got Suzanne on the phone now. Suzanne, can you describe yourself for us?
Hello, Lisa. I am Susanna Culloch, and how does one describe themselves? What I do is I am the artistic director of a traveling arts festival. This is called the Village Festival. And I moved to Australia 25 years ago. Obviously, I've got an accent and I'm from the Netherlands originally. Yes, that's what I mainly do in life. There's lots of other things, of course. I love gardening and I love cooking and I love food very much.
Who is a woman with a Central Victorian connection who has made some kind of impact on you?
Right, well, there are a lot, of course, but because I really love gardening and food, and because in my festival we have sort of a wholesome approach towards looking after our crew and artists, we've got a built-in kitchen that travels with us at the festival. And I met so many years ago, I can't remember how many years ago, but probably more than 10 years ago, I met Patricia Hay, who lived in Castlemaine, and she became the village chef for the crew and artist cook. And she would travel with us to different festivals and she would cook up a storm for a hardworking crew and artist. So we would all gather together in a shipping container kitchen and Trishy would be there smiling and she would have cooked the most amazing meals from very, very little bits and pieces because the budget wasn't huge. And I just loved the way that she gobbled together ways of making amazing meals, but also her warmth and sort of spontaneous way of being, but also cooking. You felt she would never, ever follow a recipe. You know, she would just have all the ingredients there in front of her and then make something up, which was often really amazing. And it's hard work to do that in a kitchen that is not a professional kitchen. And it's kind of like a camp kitchen, really. And in different circumstances, it could be really hot or really cold or raining. And so, yeah, she was just really flexible and adept. She could adapt anywhere to provide us with a beautiful meal. And then she would leave lovely messages with the meals and write on the blackboard beautiful little sentences. Then everyone would arrive, a little little bit of a poetry or just a friendly, like, you know, love from Trishy to all the village artists and crew. I still have like a little blackboard here in my possession where she wrote down such a message. And I'm trying to keep it. Because unfortunately, Trishy passed away. I think it's now 6 or 7 years ago that she passed away. I admired her very much in the way she nurtured through her love of cooking and her love of looking after people, because she had such a warm and nurturing way.
This podcast is produced by me, Lisa D'Onofrio, on magnificent Jarrah country. Big thanks to this episode's interviewees, Queso, Maz, Blossom, Meg and Suzanne. Cheers to Main FM, CBF and Tracy, Kate and Anne-Marie. and to all contributors and all the women who made this podcast possible, past and present, and you, the listener. If you're enjoying this podcast, please like and follow us. It really does help to get the word out. Oh, and share it with your friends too. Thanks.
Extraordinary and ordinary.
Sorry.